Thankful to be with you. We're beginning a new quarter, and we're actually going to be dealing with some material that I'm putting together as we go through this quarter, so I hope that this will go well. I'm very excited about what we're doing. Let me tell you why we're having this particular subject right now is we're trying in the teaching committee to try to cover the entire Bible, but we're trying to cover it without going through a verse-by-verse study of every book. And so we're trying to, in some cases, like we did with the life of David, you know, that was a theme that covered a good bit of Old Testament history. And likewise, what we're doing here, when we're talking about the latter stages of Israel's apostasy, we can kind of just take a theme that takes us through Ezekiel, takes us through Jeremiah, takes us through some critical books in the nation of Israel, and that will at least allow us to see the Bible story. So that's the goal of when you say, why are we having this material? Well, that's why we put this together and why we're doing what we're doing. Now, having said that, I've been very excited about putting this material together. I believe that is very, very relevant for us and the challenges that we see in our culture and even the challenges we see in the church. Apostasy, and we'll see this right up front, apostasy is a subject God's people should be familiar with. And that preacher should talk about a lot. And if you're at a place where these things are not being taught a lot, then I will show you from our study today that something's wrong. God has always wanted His people to drill in their heads how God's people can fall away and how it comes. And that'll be the course of our study. We're going to try to cover two classes per outline. I'm going to put together six outlines. There's going to be a week where I'm gone and, you know, there could be other interruptions. We could have a seventh, depending on how our schedule goes. And so, I just wanted you to get the background of our study. So, if we could, let's jump right into the material. And we're going to talk about Israel's historical path to apostasy is going to be our subject for the next 2 weeks. When you see the terrible things that happened to Israel, where God finally, eventually destroyed Jerusalem and the temple, and a remnant was taken into captivity, that didn't happen overnight. That's one of the interesting things about apostasy. Apostasy oftentimes is very gradual. It takes over a period of time, and there's actually various characteristics that take place before apostasy can be successful. In our next class, we're going to talk about leadership, and we're going to talk about the failure, the secretive leadership Israel had, and the failure of their leaders. As you talk about apostasy, the word apostasy is found in the Old Testament, not in the New. In the New, the term falling away is used. If you look at a New Testament word for falling away, that's found in 2 Thessalonians 2:3, it means a falling away, a defection, apostasy. A Freiburg lexicon says a condition resulting from changing loyalties, revolt, desertion, as a religious technical term. And what we'll find here in Scriptures, and I like one of the passages he uses Jeremiah 2:19, which gets us into the books that talk about the latter stages of Israel's apostasy. Here, God's analysis of Israel at this time through Jeremiah. It says, your own wickedness will correct you, and your backslidings will rebuke you. Know therefore and see that it is an evil and bitter thing that you have forsaken the Lord your God, and the fear of me is not in you, saith the Lord God of hosts. This is a great verse to give the bottom line analysis of when apostasy comes. Taking this verse, class, I know you haven't had time to prepare. You only had the outline this morning. Let me ask you, from this verse, what is the most terrible thing about apostasy? If you was to analyze all the statements that the Lord made about the people, what's the statements that jump out at you to showing you the root cause and the most terrible aspect of apostasy? Yeah, fear of God is not in you. Another way of putting it, you're forsaking the Lord your God. And I would say this, if you have the fear of God in you, and you pursue God, and your heart is directed toward Him, you will not go into apostasy. You may be with some groups that are going that way, and then you'll raise questions, and you'll try to stand, and eventually you may be cast out. But the person who has a fear of God in them, what does the fear of God mean, class? Fear of God. What's recognize His power, His holiness, His character, and that He means business. That He really means business. And as we studied in a sermon about a week or so ago talking about eternal punishment, about hell, that God means business. If you look at the cross, that tells you God means business. Jesus had to die on that cross in order to be the sacrifice for our sin. God does not overlook sin. And so God is a loving God, but we must understand and fear Him. And He tells us not to go down a certain path. Not only can we suffer earthly consequences, but eternal consequences. And it can affect our thinking, our mind. One of the things about apostasy, and I've been very impressed with this as you study New Testament passages, is that Satan can take your mind away. You can have all kinds of religious garb on, and you can be involved in all kinds of religious activity and have all kinds of religious words from your mouth, but you can be just as blind as a bat, going down a path of rebellion. You can lose your mind very easily if Satan's tools are used in you, the works of the flesh, the anger, the lust, the various things that you see people even today taken away by that. So apostasy is something very real. It's not something that we should take lightly. Keep continuing in the book of Jeremiah. Notice how, again, it's a rejection of God and His character. And God's saying, you know, you ought to be astonished at this. This ought to make you go, wow. But it didn't. Jeremiah 2:11, has a nation changed its gods, which are not gods? But my people have changed their glory for what does not profit. Be astonished, O heavens, at this, and be horribly afraid. Be very desolate, saith the Lord. For my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewn themselves cisterns, broken cisterns, that can hold no water. Is that astonishing to you? It ought to be. And it's real. Why would the Jews not be astonished? Let's just say, let's put ourselves right now in the nation of the Jews with the religious leaders and the priests they had and the kings they had. Why would they not be astonished? If you told them, you've fallen away from God, what might they say? We haven't fallen away from God. Temple's still right here. We haven't fallen away from God because out of my mouth I serve Jehovah. See, Satan is very deceptive. You can be fighting God and have this religious veneer on you, and you say, I'm serving God. Remember at the judgment day in Matthew 7, some of those who did not go into heaven, what did they say? Have we not prophesied in your name and worked miracles? And what did Jesus say to them? I never knew you. Depart from me, ye who practice lawlessness. So again, the religious debate exists today. Those going down a path in rebellion against God are going to give you every argument. We love God. We believe in the love of God. We believe in the will of God. And so in battling deception, this is not easy. It is not. But if you'll have a heart toward God and know. Now, another thing. I'll tell you another thing that you'll see, and we're going to hit this point next. People who are driving the truck down the road off the cliff are going to laugh at you for being concerned. They will call you names. They'll think, oh, here's the radical, always got some crisis going on. Oh, they're upset about something else. I want to address that next. Roman numeral 1. I could not possibly list all the verses we could list. But let's think about this. When did Israel become a nation? When was their baptism, so to speak, to become a nation in all practical purposes? What was Israel's baptism? Crossing the Red Sea. I would say, you know, here they grew to a great nation. Moses stands up as their leader, and their birth, so to speak, is coming out of Egypt. Crossing the Red Sea. They're the people of God. Now, they're a new nation. Since they're new, you don't need to talk about apostasy, do you? How often did Moses talk about apostasy? And in how many ways did he try to drill it into the heads of the house of Israel? I couldn't list them all. If I tried to list those verses, we would spend the rest of the quarter talking about what Moses tried to emphasize at the very beginning. You might have said, Moses, you preaching that sermon again? You know, Moses, that's a Jericho sermon. You're preaching, going around the same point seven times, you know. Come on, Moses, get you another topic. Let me show you. Just, you talk about emphasis, and I'm giving you just a few of the verses. Read of all of Deuteronomy 28. But it shall come to pass that if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God to observe carefully all of His commandments and His statutes which I command you today, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. Cursed you shall be in the city, and cursed you shall be in the country. Cursed you shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Cursed shall be the fruit of your body and the produce of your land, the increase of your cattle and the offspring of your flocks. Cursed shall you be when you come in, and cursed you shall be when you go out. The Lord will send on you cursing. We're getting that idea, aren't we? The Lord will send on you cursing, confusion and rebuke and all that you set your hand to do until you are destroyed, until you perish quickly because of the wickedness of your doings in which you have forsaken me. The Lord will make the plague cling to you until He has consumed you from the land which you're going to possess. The Lord will strike you with consumption, with fever, with inflammation, with severe burning fever, with sword, with scorching, and with mildew. They shall pursue you until you perish. And your heavens which are over your head shall be bronze, and the earth which is under you shall be iron. The Lord will change the rain of your land to powder and dust. From the heaven it shall come down on you until you are destroyed. Well, you see what I mean? I mean, he could have said, you will be cursed, but what does he do? He hammers it, hammers it, hammers it. Now, Moses made a mistake in giving that kind of emphasis, didn't he? We know who Moses is, one of the meekest men who've ever lived. Keep reading. I'm giving you the short version here. Read Deuteronomy 28. Go do some research in his writings and see this emphasis. Deuteronomy 28:36. The Lord will bring you and the king whom will set over you to a nation which neither you or your fathers have known. And there you shall serve other gods, wood and stone. And you shall become an astonishment, a proverb, a byword among all the nations, where the Lord will drive you. Now, wait, what jumps out at you at verse 36? It's interesting from a historical perspective. Who was speaking here in Deuteronomy 28? It was Moses. What is interesting here as you read this? What is something that jumps out of you and you go, whoa, wait a minute, historically, this doesn't fit. What do you see here? A king. Yeah. So here, we see prophecy here, don't we? We see here where Moses is not only dealing with this generation, but looking at to the context of the latter stages of Israel's apostasy. But you see here, God, oh, He wants to get through their head. Keep reading. Well, anyway, God wanted His people to know. And again, you can take time in Deuteronomy 28, read. But you think back, and sometime, you know, you just think through it. All the efforts that God made to drill in their head this point. And so this generation at the very beginning of the nation needed to hear it. But I rather say that every generation needs to hear it. And I'll make points as well. Notice who else needed to hear it. Go a little further. Deuteronomy 29, the very next chapter. Moses still on his subject. Still going. Verse 20 of Deuteronomy 29. The Lord will not spare him, for then the anger of the Lord and His jealousy would burn against that man, and every curse that is written in the book would settle on him, and the Lord would blot out his name from under heaven. And the Lord would separate him from all the tribes of Israel for adversity, according to the curses of the covenant that are written in the book of the law, so that the coming generation of your children who rise up after you, and the foreigner who comes in from a far land, would say, when they see the plagues of the land and the sickness which the Lord has laid on it, the whole land is brimstone, salt, and burning. It is not sown, nor does it bear, nor does any grass grow there. Like the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboim, which the Lord overthrew in His anger, in His wrath. All the nations would say, why has the Lord done so to this land? What does the heart of this great anger mean? Let's just stop here. The Lord, when we talk about this, and then when it actually occurs, we see that the Lord has various ones in mind when He talks about this kind of destruction. Here we see the nations would see it. Earlier we see the next generation would see it. And he wants this principle drilled in their head. Why does this happen? Why is the anger there? Verse 25. Then people would say, because they have forsaken the covenant of the Lord God of their fathers, which he made with them when he brought them out of the land of Egypt, for they went and served other gods and worshipped them, gods that they did not know until he had not given to them. Then the anger of the Lord was aroused against the land to bring on it every curse that is written in this book. And the Lord uprooted them from their land in anger, in wrath, in great indignation, and cast them into another land as it is this day. Okay, when we look at all this, God says, I want all the nations to know this. I want other generations to know this. And could I say he wants us to know this? 1 Corinthians 10:11, dealing with the Old Testament, now these things happen to them as examples. They were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. And so here's the question I have to you, class. What does God want people to know from Israel's fall? What's the cause of this anger? What's the answer? We've already read it. What? They didn't fear him. They forsook his covenant. They went a direction in which they had no instruction from God to go at all. Okay. Now, folks, we must never get tired of that kind of teaching. And whether church has already jumped over the barrel and gone farther than they could be brought back or not, one of the things that you will see in churches that will stand and churches that will not stand is the teaching they receive. If you stood at the feet of Moses, you're going to hear this. What if, let's just, for instance, we continue to talk about this. We'll talk, what if we stood, and I thought I had this, and I must have left it out. It should have been in the outline. But what if we had stood at the feet of Paul? What did Paul say when he talked to the church, the Ephesian elders in Acts 20, 28 through 30? What did Paul preach every day and night with tears? Yeah, there are going to be people rise from among you. So again, the point I want you to see, and if we don't get anything else out of this lesson than this, this is a subject we've got to keep hearing. What do people today, when they hear those, what do some people within the church say when they hear a subject like this? Oh, legalist. I'm legalist. Oh, man. Oh, here they're just trying to give it. And I want to tell you, we need to very in a balanced way present this, as we have already. We're talking about the love of God. We're talking about the nature of God. We're talking about serving God. And yeah, there's such a thing as legalism, where a person is giving emphasis to the law and leaves God's out and leaves God's grace out. And there is a danger of legalism. I do not want to minimize that. But we need to understand this is a subject that as a jumping away from legalism, we don't hear it. We do our hearers an injustice. And I'll say it as a Christian, as an evangelist, I don't want to face God in judgment, where he says, hey, why didn't you warn? All right. Let's keep going. Now, Moses was the last person to warn of apostasy, right? Now, think about significant days in the nation of Israel. What was one of the most significant days of rejoicing in the history of Israel where they... It was a great event, and you see it on the chart up here. The dedication of the temple. How many years did it take? Now here's this beautiful temple, and here's a place where God says, I'm going to dwell, and here is that occasion. Everybody's together and joyful. Don't start going negative on me, Solomon. Don't start talking about judgment and being cast aside. This is a day of rejoicing. Well, no. Solomon was being led by God in saying what he said. Listen to what Solomon said. When they sin against you, for there is no one who does not sin, and you become angry with them and deliver them to the enemy, and take them captive to a land far near, yet when they come to themselves in the land where they were carried captive and repent and make supplication to you, in the land of their captivity, saying, we have sinned, we have done wrong, and have committed wickedness. And when they return to you with all their heart and all their soul in the land of their captivity, where they have been carried captive, and pray toward their land which you have given their fathers, the city which you have chosen, and toward the temple which I have built for your name. At the dedication of the temple, what is Solomon telling what's going to happen in the future of Israel? They're going to be carried away captive. By the way, when they were carried away captive, what is an interesting thing that you see in this verse 38 that you may say from a historical standpoint, when they're carried away captive, they're praying in what direction? According to this verse? Toward their land, the city which you have chosen, and what else? Now, if they're in that land praying toward the temple, what condition is the temple in? It's destroyed. It's just interesting. I don't know. I just find that interesting here. So, Solomon, at this time of rejoicing, guys, you're going to have to give attention to book, chapter, verse, following the will of God, watching your attitudes, watching your heart. We're stubborn mules. All of us are stubborn mules. And if we don't get popped by the 2x4 often, our attitude goes south. We're not any different than them. And so that's the sort of emphasis that you see given here. It's very simple. Be humble, repent, pray, listen. By the way, what's another thing here in this statement of Solomon? What is ironic? What is ironic about this? You go serve other gods. I think earlier, you serve other gods. You get cast away. You need to humble and come back. What is ironic about this particular message being delivered by Solomon? He did. And so you could be the preacher. You could be a teacher. You could be a prophet of God. And not necessarily get in your old thick skull the message you're teaching. And so again, I mean, and what this ought to bring to us is humility. Okay? Humility. It's not like, hey, we've got it right and everybody else is wrong. No. We could easily go down the wrong path. Watch your heart, Christian. Don't start doing it because other churches go a certain direction and other preachers preach a certain thing. We got to have a mindset of knowing the danger and drawing as close to God as we can. And you see, that if we're going to be His people, that's what we got to do. Got to keep our focus on God. It involves a relationship with God. It involves a knowledge of His nature. It involves a fellowship. And it should be prayer, not pray, but prayer was a good barometer where their hearts was at. Solomon was talking about that in the dedication of the temple. Now, let's go talk about, okay, why did apostasy come? What are the sources of apostasy? I really think, this is my opinion, what is Satan's, one of his greatest tools? I think it's his greatest tool. If you are to be influenced to go down a path you ought not to go down, how's Satan going to best get to you? Think about it. Where would he best get to you? Relationships. I really think that's great. Satan's great to relationships. And therefore, we need to be wise about relationships. We need to understand. And this social pressure spoken by Jesus. Luke 9:26, for whoever is ashamed of me and my words, of him the Son of Man will be ashamed when he comes in his own glory and his Father's and his holy angels. The idea of being ashamed. Shame generally is a shame in relationship to the audience that you have. And if you're ashamed of Jesus, it's going to be because you're around other people that don't believe in him and don't trust him. That audience somehow has affected you, and Satan will use ridicule and laughter to try to beat you down. You know, Israel was around other nations, and they were very different. Let me tell you, as Israel began, okay, let's just start with Moses, the days of the judges. Let's take that time period. What makes Israel very different? What would make Israel different from all the other nations at this point? Are they up to date and modern? Will they kind of match the other nations step for step in their progress? What is characteristic of Israel that's not characteristic of other countries? When a country would attack Israel, normally who would be leading that country? A king, wouldn't it? Who was the king of Israel in the day of the Judges? Didn't have one, did they? Well, how about a standing army? Certainly they've got taxation, a standing army, you know, military generals that are trained, full-time soldiers, right? Well, Israel, what's wrong with you? Look at all the nations around you. Look at the organization, the tax structure, the military skills. Israel, you're too far behind the times, buddy. You're going to have to learn change. Do you see the pressure? What did God say when it came to this military skill in a battle? What wins a battle? What did he tell Israel wins a battle? I don't have those verses up here. What did he tell wins a battle? Trust in God. Trusting God wins a battle, not military skills. You see the struggle? You see with us? I mean, you go look at us, we're going to have the same. You're not like the churches around you. Similar stuff. Now, why did God not give them a king at this point? Why did he not give them a general in the sense of a full-time army? Why did he not give them that? Huh? Yeah. Remember Gideon? When Gideon was getting ready to go to battle and he had a large number of men, what did God say? You got too many. And why did he want to have just a handful of men win the battle? Why did God want that to happen? Yeah, give God the credit, right? Hey, you're not going to win the battles. If you'll trust me, the power of a living faith, that's what will make God's people different in every generation. And the world watches us act by faith, and they're going to say, why? You're crazy. Come on. So here's the pressure of Israel. Israel's not up to date. Oh, man, you're old-fashioned. You're just not with it. And so, again, you know, we can see why there would be this almost a shame. We got these old religious guys running it. I mean, these guys, I believe in God just like everybody else. But come on, we got to be up to date. We're going to be taken captive. We're going to lose out economically. Were there times that happened? Let's just take an example, the Philistines. Philistines never were a very big problem to the Israelites, were they? Oh, they were the nemesis. And let's say when the Philistines were successful militarily, let's say you lived in Israel and you're in the territory of the Philistines. What would that mean to you and to you feeding your family? What would happen if you had a crop and you're not protected militarily and the Philistines roam through that area? What happens? They'll take it away or they burn it if they want to. You got to constantly hide. I mean, could you imagine being under the oppression of a foreign... I mean, and what would you think? Let's think about it. Here you are. Let's say we're here in Auburn and a country invades and takes over this part of the country. And kind of what are you thinking? We need to do something about this. And what do you think you need to do? I'm speaking from a worldly standpoint. What needs to be done? We need to cast these guys out. And this shouldn't happen again. Now, let's ask this question. That's a good question. Actually, God wants them to ask this question. But now, what answer could you possibly get? Why did the Philistines take over a certain region and they suffer? And how can you keep it from happening again? The worldly answer is what? What's that? You need a king and an army. Spiritual answer is what? What did God want them to learn? Book of Judges. You need to trust me. You fell into sin, and I wanted you to suffer so you can be humbled, and you come back and say, we need to serve you. You see? But you see the battle, and you can understand over time. I will tell you, in this world, you take a group of people, and particularly a group of people who have children, and they have children, you're going to see this kind of cycle And matter of fact, guess what that gets us to next, book of Judges. Just read this. Judges 2:7. So the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which had done for Israel. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died when he was 110 years old. They buried him within the borders of inheritance at Timnah. Now let's look at verse 10. When all that generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord, nor the work which he had done for Israel. And you go ahead and you read the rest of these verses, and what you see in the book of Judges is kind of like a little sine wave. Let's say they're taken captive. They fall away from God. They're taken captive. They're in captivity. They're praying to God. They're humbled. God raises up a judge. And what does the judge do? He delivers them. And guess what? They become faithful. And then what happens next? These people who become faithful, they have children, don't they? And their children have children. And guess what rises up? Another generation that did not know the Lord. Could I tell you, this verse is a great verse to study religious history. There is no religious group in churches of Christ, those who are trying to be undenominational Christians, stand on the Bible alone, are not immune from this. You look at the generation of the 30s and 40s and look at the stands they took, and then you look at today. And there's a lot of analysis that could be taken in why people are changing their positions religiously and doing other things. But one of the things I will tell you, this is obvious, this is a give me. You've got a different generation. And when you got a different generation, what is that generation going to believe? What is going to be the determining factor of what the next generation, our children, our grandchildren, what is going to be the determining factor of what they believe? First off, it's going to be our homes. And historically, God's people do a miserable job. And I'm just speaking broadly. In instilling faith in their children. Matter of fact, we're going to see later when Samuel was asked to give us a king. You know what one of the problems of why they wanted Samuel to give them a king? Samuel's sons. This is quite interesting. We just didn't have enough time or space to give you the list of the kings of Israel, but I noticed one guy was writing a note on some of my research. He says, have you noticed how many good kings had terrible children? It's interesting. The failure of raising children and the way of the Lord is a typical failure. And that's some of the things that I want us to see and understand as we study this material. We need to be humbled, and we need to be very determined to walk in the path of the Lord. This is perfect. My goal is to finish this part of the outline. Looks like we're going to get there. We've got a little time for some discussion, and we could talk about anything in this material that we've covered. Any observations you guys have? I kind of rushed through some things. Is there anything you might want to raise dealing with the home, dealing with church history, dealing with the Moses and some of his teachings? Let me ask you this. In raising your children, let's think about this. Okay, how can we teach this to our children? If we were to get one little nugget here, if we want to be sure that our children do not fall away from the Lord, let's make a little bullet list here. What are some things we want to make sure are there? Point number one, one at a time, okay, here. Yeah, our example, excellent. And what would they need to see in our example, and what do we need to teach in that, in both verbal and example? Our example, what's it? What else? Walking in a path of the Lord is great, really good. What else from some of the material we talk about? What's the root of apostasy? We discussed this. If you was to look at the very root of apostasy, what would it be? What's that? Influence of people all around you. As a matter of fact, couldn't it also be said following brethren who are faithful? One of the things that I try to emphasize is my faithfulness is faithfulness to God. Because, you know, if you study religious apostasy, there have been apostasy in this country where 90% of the churches went a certain direction. Could you imagine if 90% of the churches went a certain direction? What if every church in the state went a certain direction? That happened in Nebraska years ago. Have we had a bell ring yet? Both of them? Oh, okay. I'm deaf. You got to help. Okay, I appreciate your participation. To summarize, fear of God and to stand upon Him and not follow brethren. Thank you for your participation. Appreciate it.